Hey, this is Pete Cerones, and I am excited today to have a conversation with my colleague, somebody I respect and have gotten to know in the past few months. His name is Jeff Mercurio. He is the Strategic Partnership Coordinator at OnPoint Consulting, which is a technology and consulting services partner to government, industry, and everybody inside and outside the Beltway. Jeff is somebody who I have a lot of respect for. He has a strong background in biomedical research as a trained biologist specializing in neuroscience, which, for those of us who may or may not know what that is, it's the study of the brain and social behavior. 7 years working at NIH, his pedigree is immense and awesome. He's an advocate for education. I'm going to let him tell his story, but we're going to dive into a topic that's very hot and interesting and compelling, and that is artificial intelligence. But before we get into that, Jeff, I always like when guests talk about their personal and professional journeys through their own words. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that and your passion, and then what brought you to OnPoint?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me, Pete. Appreciate being on here. As you said, my name's Jeff. Today, I'm the Strategic Partnership Coordinator for OnPoint, where I manage some of the relationships that we have with industry and federal agencies and see where there are synergies that we can work on together between our capabilities. Regarding my background, you covered it really well for how extensive it is in the sciences. You covered it well for one sentence, but I have more than 10 years of biomedical research under my belt. But specifically, I worked at NIH, the National Institutes of Health, in multiple institutes across the National Institutes of Health doing neuroscience research. So I started back in 2016 as just a neuroscience research fellow and continued doing molecular, behavioral, and cognitive neuroscience research at NIH throughout grad school, after grad school. And now I'm kind of officially out of the science world, but you can imagine that even in science, artificial intelligence was always a hot topic. So now I'm in a different environment and I'm trying to utilize my knowledge and my skills, all my expertise in learning, behavior, communication. That's what led me to join the strategy team at OnPoint.
Well, that's awesome. And Jeff, like me, you're a dot connector. You're a translator. When I met you a while ago, I remember thinking, wow, this guy's like me. He's a marketing, media, interested in people kind of guy. And I didn't recognize until I really did some research on you how just rooted you are and passionate again about science and healthcare and technology underpinning a lot of that. So we are cut out of the same cloth, but I'm excited to learn some things today. And folks, for those listening, we are going to dive into the topic and we're going to reference an article that we found from March 18 of 2021 titled AI Should Augment Human Intelligence, Not Replace It. And it's an amazing, well-written piece that even if it's a couple years old, it's so relevant to today. I'm excited, Jeff, to kind of get your perspective on that.
I was going to say, you mentioned it being 2021, which is a couple of years ago, and 2023 seems to be the booming year of AI. However, when you go into the article and read it, I'm sure you remember, it cites a story about a supercomputer from 1997 and 1998. So I just thought that was
Well,
really interesting.
again, folks, anybody who wants to just Google AI should augment human intelligence, not replace it, March 18, 2021, you'll see and read and hear what Jeff and I will maybe distill down for you. But yes, there's some terms, and I'm going to have Jeff break some of that down for us. But yes, the good old, what was it, Deep Blue, I believe it was,
Deep
with
blue, yep.
IBM and Garry Kasparov and chess. So we'll jump around. But
Yeah.
before we jump into that for our federal audience too, I mean, we know that AI is compelling. It is something that is an umbrella for so many other offshoots of that technology, from large language models to we hear ChatGPT and Google Bard, and then you get into deep learning. There's so much you can take and should study when it comes to what AI is about, and the federal government clearly presently that is wrapping their heads around it, and hopefully we'll see some guidance coming out for federal government to take and do great things with and partner with folks like OnPoint. So Jeff, let's put that hat of yours on that is technologist meets neuroscientist. The article itself addresses human intelligence, machine intelligence, and then eventually augmented intelligence. But for you and our audience, why do you think so many people are apprehensive or concerned or worried about AI today and the tools? tools that enable AI to potentially be a promising complement to human intuition?
That's a really good question. It's probably one of my favorite questions to tackle when it comes to the AI conversation. I think there is, or rather I know, right? There is a lot of fear around AI because there's fear around change in general whenever change occurs, right? And when change occurs fast and quickly, we can't even keep up with the change at some level, which reminds me of kind of the beginning of the last talk you had with Samara when she was just saying, my head is always spinning when I talk about this topic. I think that's where people get scared is because, first of all, not everybody knows everything. You hear AI, you hear the crazy, very impressive things it can do that some humans can't. And then that's where most people stop. And they don't want to learn more about how they work or what goes into them to make it work and the different kinds of AI and the levels of AI. Some people totally ignore the fact that there is already artificially intelligent software embedded throughout every single piece of technology that all of us use every single day. There's not going to be a consensus where we send an email out to everybody one day saying, hey, we're going to start using AI today, right? Like we're not waiting for that. It's already here, but now we're starting to delve into these really complicated, complex algorithms that can do things that teams of people used to have to do. And that's what's scary to people is, A, what can it do? What are the capabilities? B, you can go in the ethical direction. Are we sure this is going to be okay? Of course, the movies we have about it, the many movies like iRobot, et cetera, don't give us a positive view with what AI could turn into. But, and then C, just they think that it's going to steal their jobs, which I want to talk a little bit about as well.
Yeah, we're going to jump into that. And I'm going to just echo the word you use, change, right? Change is, in my view, it's never a bad thing, but there's it's scary. It's disruptive to your point. There's a lot to learn, not just about AI, but look, we could talk cloud. Remember when cloud was like, oh man, I'm not going to put my data there and then somebody's going to steal it. That's just something I remember from 2009. But technology to me is indicative of that feeling of that fear. But there's an excitement, exactly. Right? There's what I call, hey, we have to mitigate risk and we also have to, you know, believe in the art of the possible. Technology has evolved from Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, right?
To give you another comment on that, to bring it kind of to neuroscience, I want to mention that fear and excitement are actually chemically very similar in the brain, like on a neurochemical level. You have levels of cortisol spike. This is a stress hormone. When we get scared, but we also get this when we get excited. So I remember I opened a fortune cookie years ago and I still have it taped to my computer. This was like 7, maybe 8 or 9 years ago even that I opened this fortune cookie and it says, fear is just excitement in need of an attitude adjustment. And I thought that was really powerful. I just wanted to mention that because fear really is excitement just with a different perspective, like with a different lens on it. So we just have to reframe a little bit about how we think about some of these things.
Well, now you got me like, look, I have a fear of heights and I'm not a fan of the roller coaster. And I got to tell you, I fear it. It doesn't excite me. I've tried to conquer it. So maybe one of these days you'll give me some tips on that when I go to Universal Studios or something with the kids again, when I'm not sitting there holding all this stuff while they're enjoying the rides. Okay, Jeff, what a table setting. So thanks for that. You know, it is a scary thing. And everybody who's listening, you do have to read and learn and keep doing that and speak to folks like Jeff who can explain things and translate and maybe mitigate some of that fear. But let's jump into the article. And look, I mean, you and I have talked about it. It addresses machine intelligence, human intelligence, augmented intelligence, which is to me this exciting concept of complementary, you know, human brain activity. We're not putting people out of work, but also leveraging the power of computation and computers. So if I may, and this isn't meant to be the hardball, kind of break those three down in their evolution. And hopefully folks will understand that hey, this is something that is evolving, but it's not one or the other.
Yeah. So the article in a nutshell breaks down, like you said, three forms of quote unquote AI. They say AI 1, which they refer to as artificial intelligence, what we know as artificial intelligence, AI 2, which is authentic intelligence, meaning human intelligence. I would probably just call it human intelligence. And then AI 3, which is what they call augmented intelligence. which some people even argue that artificial intelligence should just be called augmented intelligence. However, this is an idea that augmented intelligence truly is the intersection between human capability and computer superpowers. So, like I said before, we've already been embedded in AI software all over the place. The autocorrect on your phone, even when you're typing emails and it just thinks of things that you might say, that's artificial intelligence because it's guessing what you might say based on what you've said in the past.
See, Jeff, when you're talking right now, I remember back in the day, again, aging myself, when I was working in the Pentagon and then eventually moved over to the U.S. Department of Education, and computer security was the thing. Ooh, we're learning about passwords and IDs and the internet. And we just knew, hey, I don't want to forget my password. And what went into encryption and all that sort of thing, it was like, for me, even, well, I knew somebody was just handling that. Your point, artificial intelligence, using the iPhone, doing searches, things, thinking like you might be anticipating this next question, I will do that. There's that, oh, wow, I don't worry about it. It's helping me do my job. But then all of a sudden we get into what now is the trustworthiness. You mentioned the ethical component, the equity component. How do you talk to folks about that in terms of, again, I want to say suppressing the fear, but also recognizing, hey, we got to have people working on that and leveraging, right, technology so that it doesn't come across as, well, someone's going to be out of a job in a month.
Well, I think really what it comes down to is education and understanding, right? That fear is never going to go away and that trust is never going to be built if us as individuals or organizations, companies, but you have to start at that micro level, that individual level. If we don't jump in when we have the opportunity and start learning about it when we can, right? When I was so disappointed in myself for really only starting to indulge in the AI, you know, boom back in probably like April or May. And I have to tell you, my life has changed. The quality of my life has changed. I've used
so
many different tools for so many different things. For example, if you want to go to my LinkedIn page, feel free to connect with me if you do. But that picture that I have on my LinkedIn, I used AI to smooth my face so that it's like a higher resolution photo. It was a good photo, but it was really pixelated. So I found an AI, smoothed it out. That purple shirt I'm wearing, I was wearing a coat in that picture with a scarf. And I took it out with artificial intelligence using the generative Photoshop in Adobe's Photoshop. And now I'm wearing a nice button-down shirt. I don't have shame about that because it's like a picture that just people see and it looks like me, right? So that's an example of using AI.
Well, that's great. And like I said, I mean, I think that's cool. And I think it's people opening the aperture of their own mind to like, hey, what can I do with this? And if it's a picture or just looking at data differently or using tools, right, for especially R&D, how we can cure cancer, how we can have cleaner water. Like that's that mission. I know you at OnPoint and the team are looking to bridge that gap of, okay, AI is something you can be in one camp or the other, or hopefully in both, meaning it can be an enabler, but we want to innovate and transform and help, you know, move the needle on what I call resilience and yes, curing those things that unfortunately sometimes lead to loss of life. But let's geek out for a minute, this neuroscience background you have. Now this is Pete to Jeff, Jeff to your perspective. So everybody, this is how Jeff thinks. Does AI work at all like the human brain? And what aspects can human brains, no matter how sophisticated it becomes, feel good about it? As I know from my days at the Department of Energy, I worked with the folks who do neuromorphic computing. They would say it's the most powerful supercomputer by far in the world. We just can't study a live one. So how do you correlate when you talk to your students and others about, think of the brain and the AI in this manner?
Yes. What we have to remember, right, is that artificial intelligence is, I think this goes over a lot of people's heads until they take a second to really realize it. It's called artificial intelligence, meaning it's not real intelligence. It's artificial. We created it, right? So whatever we think intelligence is, which we still can barely define as humans, we've created an artificial version, right? So now we've created an artificial version of something we already barely know anything about. The human brain does a million things, but one thing that you can see algorithms do that humans do is look at history and make decisions. So decision making is where AI becomes quote unquote intelligent. That's where it becomes close to us because it can produce decisions that a really well-versed expert in a specific field can make. So I think that automatically makes people think, oh man, it can do everything that a human brain can do. But what a human brain can do that AI will likely not be able to do for a very long time, if ever, is instill genuine creativity, right? Is actually think about the emotions of people that are involved in a situation, or the preferences of people, or the mannerisms of people, like understanding body language and the actual intricacies of human communication and connection. AI isn't there yet. And I don't think we're even trying to get there. I think we're going to produce it to be this super great tool to a point, but I don't think we're ever really trying to recreate human intelligence. Who knows? That could be a different conversation. But I think mostly what's happening is data scientists are getting really excited about the incredible capabilities that they're realizing we now have.
Yeah, there's a line in the article when you appreciated you mentioning this third type of AI augmented intelligence. And again, folks, check this article out. It's like, it's almost if somebody wrote it today and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's how I feel. And it says that with humans, the power of working with AI comes from how the person, in this case, computer, complement each other. Exactly. And I just think as a former, well, CTO still in my DNA, but I used to love bridging that it's not binary, right? I mean, no matter what the technology is, how can it complement the workforce? And I know that's something On Point is focused on with when this guidance comes out, there will have to be a component of, hey, we can help you, agency X, state government Y, use tools to complement those human beings doing jobs today, because I'm still a believer in intuition will reign supreme. And I, no disrespect to the ones and zeros, the bits and bytes, but together it could be a pretty exciting marriage. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree?
I totally agree. I think that, you know, if we don't dive into it head first and kind of learn about it so that we can teach about it, then how much skin do we really feel like we have in the game if we don't want to know about something that we work on? And I think it's really important to make something that is so currently so scary to so many people and agencies, right? Not just people run agencies. And so because of that, agencies don't utilize some of this technology. So I think it's important to have corporations or organizations like On Point to just break it down for some people and explain that this is what it is and this is what it isn't. And this is how your company or your agency or anything can benefit from it times a million moving forward.
Well said. And now I'm going to brag a little bit about just knowing you. Everybody who's listening, Jeff is very active inside of the Beltway. He attends any and all nonprofit events, from the ACT-IACs to the AFSEAs to the specific ones focused on homeland security and defense. And Jeff, I like to finish with like a parting shot. I mean, obviously you hit the high points on this really wonderful article. We talked about AI. It's something that's on every federal agency's mind, anybody who works in it, but also, you know, we talked about the social component in society, right? When we go home at night, we still think about this. And I'm just appreciative of your advocacy. You're an adjunct professor of biology at Georgetown and Montgomery College, and you're teaching this in a way that is a storytelling mannerism, and I love it. Thank you for that. And give me a parting shot for folks listen to this and want to learn more.
I just want to pretty much reiterate the title of the article is AI Should Augment Human Intelligence, Not Replace It. It's by the Harvard Business Review, by David de Kramer and Garry Kasparov. What we didn't talk about in there that I think everybody should go and check that article out is that it first talks about this augmented intelligence, this combination of intelligence between machine and human, and how it can be better, right? But the article is about a champion chess player who is Garry Kasparov, one of the authors of this article, and how he lost in 1997 to a supercomputer. And then he reframed that loss, because that was like a big deal at that time. And he had an innovative approach by taking that loss and thinking about how he could spin it. And what he did was he started playing advanced chess, and that is when a championship chess player plays alongside with a supercomputer. He did this, they had a tie, and that is what made him start thinking about collaboration between the technologies and the human intelligence. So I just wanted to mention that was the like meat of the article, because I think it is a really relatable way to bring it back to something that's not always about data and cybersecurity or ChatGPT, you know what I mean? I just think it's really important to start thinking about how augmented intelligence can improve efficiency or creativity moving forward in, you know, for ourselves or our organizations.
And Jeff, I love the Cliff's Notes or the Jeff's Notes versions, because we didn't want to spoil it. It's a great read. But my parting shot is just to build off what you were just saying, and that is, you know, when this competition between human and machine happened, what I loved, and you just articulated, was that what Garry Kasparov figured out was, while he lost, you know, this ability to complement and think about, well, I didn't lose. How can together, computer, machine, and human brain, what have you, afford more collaborative opportunities to transform and innovate? And I know that's something that you take to heart as you work with federal government and agencies. So shout out to you, Jeff, On Point Consulting, for getting you. It's a great get. And I'm excited to know you and to see you around the Beltway and hopefully have another conversation. Maybe we can geek out a bit more on the neuroscience angle, because you are an expert.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Awesome. I'll talk to you later, bud.